I'm off my game today.
No, you're not.
That's true.
People are going to have to start making better content.
I think we're going to be talking about this for a long time.
When you program for everyone, you program for no one.
I think it's that we're a purpose-driven platform. Like, we're trying to get to substance. How was that? Are you happy with that?
Yeah.
This is marketing therapy right now.
It really is. Yeah.
What's up? I'm Laura Carenti.
And I'm Alexa Kristen. Welcome back, Adlandia.
So, Alexa, recently I sent you a picture that is circulating the internet of a Netflix billboard, and I thought we might start there.
I have a confession. I have to tell you something. I saw that, and I started to sweat. When I was 22, 23, Yahoo had a billboard, two billboards, one in Times Square, one in San Francisco, just like the Netflix billboard. And guess who had to program the content on that billboard? Guess who? Yours truly. It was me. Every week, a new message. And guess what I did?
Oh, wait, were you changing the messaging yourself? Or did
I wasn't climbing a ladder, Laura.
I was going into the visual of you not only concepting, but producing and actually executing.
That would be amazing. No, but I concepted the copy, and then I had to send it to the installer who would go up and put up the letters, right? So this is 2003, 2004. I was a bitty boo in the agency world. And I get this call from my client freaking out, the internet had broken. And I was like, what's wrong? And they were like, you put the URL on the billboards incorrectly. And you would think all of Yahoo went down. But no, it was a slight change of the dot. The dot was in the wrong place for the URL. That was my biggest career fumble.
You could call it a fumble, or you could have asked to see the back end visits to know whether or not your billboard was an effective traffic driver. A truly unique Alexa Kristen URL.
It was a truly unique Alexa Kristen URL. And in fact, it was 100% bounce. 100% bounce on that URL. It was a true career shining moment.
Then the Netflix copy couldn't be more on brand. Alexa, the copy said, don't give up on your dreams. We started with DVDs.
I started with the incorrect URL. And there you have it.
Full circle.
I think that's where the show begins and maybe ends today.
So, Alexa, we have a great guest on the show today. Monica Padman from Armchair Expert is here.
So good. But before we get into the Monica interview, we had a really good conversation last night. I called you last night because something has been bothering me, something that actually this episode got me thinking about in a slightly different way. And it's in context to what's been happening in the news with media outlets in the last 2 weeks. And something that Monica said, and you guys will hear this in the episode, the Armchair Umbrella has a huge, huge audience, right? They do 20 million downloads a month just on Armchair Expert, on their main show.
Which just to put that in context, Tom Brady came back to play the New England Patriots, Sunday Night Football, doing 28.5 million viewers. So just to give some context as to the universe that we're talking about here.
And that's Armchair Experts doing that monthly. And so when we brought that up to Monica in the episode, she was like, we don't think about that. I don't want to think about that. In fact, I don't even want to hear that number. And it got me thinking about how are we actually quantifying and, more importantly, qualifying what is good in media. And Laura, you said something to me last night. We've gotten into the game of more is more. But is it? Is it really more? Is more the goal? Because as we go into the issues that have come up in the last week with media companies, they've been chasing scale, the race to the bottom. And that's become the measuring stick, which is how big's your audience? Because you can sell more ads. How do you get to more eyeballs? And what's happened is through years, right? What you and I ended up talking about last night was what's the solve? Because as long as media is race to the bottom, more is more, volume, 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 buying on a CPM. Until that changes, we are going to see media outlets continue to put profit over great content, over people, over what's right. And we will constantly see some form of inflation of those numbers.
So in building on that, bridging last week's episode to this week's episode, there was something that Austin said in our conversation with Morning Brew on our last episode that really stuck out to me. And I can't stop thinking about it. When he was talking about receiving one of their first big RFPs from a major advertiser, they RFP'd for a range of budget. And as part of that conversation, he posed a question, which was, well, how big does our audience have to be to warrant your $500,000 commitment or RFP? And it sat with me because there's a common denominator here that we've applied as buyers in the industry, that the same model or methodology I apply to buying a major broadcast network would be the same methodology I apply to buying a niche newsletter. When I think about people raising their hand, subscribing to a newsletter, spending 5+ minutes with the newsletter, sharing the newsletter, coming back the next day in their inbox, opening the newsletter, it's a different behavior than being exposed to a 30-second spot on television. But yet I buy it the same way. Is that correct? So last night after we got off the phone, which you know, I went on the internet to try to figure out the origin of the CPM model. I would love to have somebody in Atlantia come on the show and take us through the origins of the CPM model and why it hasn't evolved into modern media. And I think the thing that we're getting to today is the creator economy and Web3 might just be the thing that breaks the model.
It breaks the model. And it has to break the model. It has to break the model. That's what's so exciting about this. When we talk about media capturing audience, the flip is audience voting with their wallet on that media.
I mean, Twitter tip jar is an example of that.
Substack, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. This is not, by the way, this is not a drill. What's going to happen as more audiences fragment and they start to find who and what speaks to them? That's when you start to see the hockey stick. That's when you start to see the growth.
That's when you buy the t-shirt.
It's exactly right. It's the t-shirt. It's the ticket sale.
It is a difference between monthly active users and fandom.
And fandom.
And the metrics that you quantify for fandom as opposed to passive scale. I just think we're talking about a different model.
It's a totally different game. Kicking us back into the Monica episode, there are a couple of gems in here that could be ignored. And it's what hooked me and got me thinking about this stuff last night, which was volume versus specific. And are those things, it's very similar to the conversation we had with Alex and Austin, which is niche and scale are not mutually exclusive. You can have niche and you can have scale.
The specificity.
Specificity. Why specific is universal. So with that, Adlandia, we hope you love this listen.
We'll be right back.
All right, Adlandia, we are back with our partners at Yieldmo. If you remember, we spent our first mini series talking about how Yieldmo works with brands to make audience attention actionable. And in this mini series, we take on how contextual targeting is being reimagined as brands make every interaction with their consumer meaningful. Welcome, Lisa Bradner, GM of Data and Analytics from Yieldmo.
Thank you so much. Great to be back. Always great to talk to you guys.
Lisa, how does real time factor into context or relevance?
Real time for contextual is critical Because if you don't have that audience signal that says, I know who this person is, and I know the message I gave them previously, you need those real-time signals to say, am I serving the right creative or not? Is this message hitting or not? In addition, so much media is now integrating commerce that that window between exposure and sale is getting shorter all the time. So if you're not real-time, you may miss a sale, right? It's not just you're missing the impression, you actually missed the opportunity to close the sale. So being able to quickly optimize and adjust and using machines to do that is how you're going to increase your ROAS, your ROI, your sales overall. It's a critical component to marketing and advertising today.
And if we need to get that close to increasing the potential of that sale, conversion, engagement, what are the implications that marketers need to be thinking about in optimizing their process?
I think there's a lot of things in marketing that we need to turn on their head. I would challenge the first thing we should do is take the CDJ, right? The consumer decision journey, throw it out and rethink it, right? We've always come at it from Laura likes to listen to radio when she's up in the morning, and then she comes home and checks her phone for weather, and then she watches TV. As a marketer, I don't know what to do with that. I suggest that we turn it on their head and say, what do I want to communicate throughout my day? What is the right message, when, where, and why for my customers? And match the media and creative to that. I think we're really on the edge of marketers coming back and really owning that customer experience. And instead of worrying about each individual and thinking, if I can just collect enough data about you, I can get you to buy me, they're going to take a healthy step back to saying, who is my brand? Where does it belong? And how should I show up in each of these environments and when? To do that effectively, your creative and media strategies have to be completely linked, right? You can't build out the entire creative campaign and then say, oh yeah, I guess we should have a media plan for this. You should be building that media plan and then building the creative nodes that go with each step of that media plan. So instead of having a consumer decision journey, it should be the brand decision journey and mapping the creative and media to match all that.
Thank you, Lisa Bradner and our partners at Yieldmo. Looking forward to having you back for part 3 of our 4-part series. Welcome back, Adlandia. We're super excited to have a special guest with us today. Monica Padman is joining us in Adlandia. Monica is the co-creator, co-host, and producer of Armchair Expert. Welcome, Monica.
Hey, Monica.
Hi, thanks for having me.
We're so excited to have you. I have to shout out our friend, Brad Grossman at Zeitguide,
yes,
who connected us and was like, it was hilarious, actually. He texted me and he said, do you know Monica Padman? I wrote back, no, why would I know Monica Padman? So you were gracious enough to come on the show and talk to us about audio, podcasting, talent, and the breakout show that you and Dax Shepard have created. And I don't even want, actually, it's not even a show anymore.
It's a network. We are building
a true network. Yeah, it's a true network. So Laura and I have read all of the things, right? Like how you and Dax kind of got started. I think people can read about that. It's a great story, yes, arguing about Serial, Dax saying, I'm really interested in podcasting. You guys have created something amazing. I think there's a lot of magic in the relationship that you have, obviously. You have a really strong perspective about the programming of the show, how you edit the show, how you produce the shows that you've selected as the kind of network has started to really mature, all of those things. So that's the kind of stuff we want to talk about. But before we get into that, really talk about when I was reading, I think it was the LA Times article that was profiling the show and really got deep into a little bit more detail. And one of the things that they said was Monica presented Dax with a business plan. So Dax said, I want to do this. And you presented him with a business plan. But nowhere could I find what the business plan actually said. So Monica, what was it in the business plan?
Well, you probably haven't found details on that because that's a really... That's a really fancy way of saying what happened by saying that I proposed a business plan. Really what happened is he said, I kind of want to do a podcast. Like it was really nonchalant. And I was like, okay, let's do it. I'll figure it out. So that was kind of the business plan, I suppose. And then from there, I was like, oh, I guess I gotta figure it out. So I approached via my therapist. This is so bizarre, but I found my therapist another podcast. I was listening to this amazing podcast called Totally Lame that I used to love so much. And it's no longer a recurring podcast, but it was so good. And my therapist was on it randomly before she was my therapist. And I heard her and I was looking for a therapist. So I reached out to hello@totallylame.com, whatever their general email was, and was like, can I have the email for this therapist? And they sent it to me. And so she's my therapist now. And then I sort of reverse engineered that and reached out to my therapist. And I was like, can you please connect me to Elizabeth at Totally Lame? I'd like to pick her brain on this. So she did. And I met with her and then I sat in on a recording and watched how they did it. And I left and I thought, okay, we can do this. Might be easy to bring in a third person who can do the soundboard and I don't have to worry about that. So we did. We brought on Rob. And then from there, we kind of really got into the weeds on what we wanted the show to be. You know, I have a lot of opinions. Dax has a lot of opinions. Luckily, in business, they often align. In many other ways, they never align, which is part of the fun. But in business, they do. So, he considers himself an armchair expert, which is a hilarious phrase he learned in anthropology in college, where you think you know everything about everything.
I must say, it's a really compelling, you get it instantly, right? Which is, as marketers, we're always thinking about how do you communicate directly without having to kind of click in.
Well, yeah. I mean, I think generally, and Dax is just really, really, really good in general at naming stuff, titling scripts and everything. So that's sort of his wheelhouse in general. But it is true. I think in marketing, and I also was I double majored in theater and PR. So I took a lot of marketing classes as well and lived in that world for a bit. And so I just think relatability is the key. It's the key across the board. And everyone knows someone who's an armchair expert or who themselves considers themselves an armchair expert, like a know-it-all, essentially. Everyone has one of those in their life. So you can immediately click into that when you hear it. I think that's sort of one of the powerful things about that title in general. And titles overall that attract me. It's like, if your brain can connect into something personal, you're half the battle is done, I think.
Well, and also a level of accessibility too.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, I think you just described everything a marketer is trying to do, by the way. Period. You can get all this fancy shit, but that's what a marketer is trying to do ultimately. How do I relate my product, whatever that is, to you?
Exactly.
And now where it's getting cool is in fans and community and creativity and opening that stuff up, I think, with more players, hopefully, right? In places we didn't expect them.
Yeah.
So Monica, you had the business plan, which is I'll figure it out. You meet Rob. Rob joins the team. How did you begin to think about the thesis for the show and how you were going to program it? And was there a playbook that you kind of set out to deliver on, or was it iterative? And as you grew, you sort of learned where the sweet spot was?
I think both. So we both loved Sam Harris's podcast.
Yeah.
It's now called Waking Up with Sam Harris. We loved that show and love that show still. And a lot of our debates were centered around Sam's podcast every week. And we loved that format. It was just an interview show, but Sam is a genius. I think by real metrics, he is a genius. And so his questions were not normal. you know, they were very specific and very different, very unique to his brain, which led these interviews into such interesting territory, I think. And so we just wanted to replicate that, not replicate what Sam did, but replicate an interview show that's very authentic to us and what we think about and the way our brains work, which is a lot of vulnerability and honesty. Those are kind of the main tenets. And, you know, Dax coming from AA is so focused on progress, not perfection, the journey, not the result, you know, all of those things. And I align with all those things too, just cause. And so that has always been what we've been interested in talking about. Like, you know, we always say we're not interested in the day you won the Emmy, but the 2 weeks after when you're out of work and you don't know what to do, because that's the thing we can all relate to. So, yeah, so we always knew, like, intellectually, this is the show. But we didn't really, of course, know what the show was until we started it, until we started testing it out and doing it. We didn't know what we were doing at all. The first episode was with Kristen, and I didn't say anything. I sat there. I had no words. Like, I didn't know. We didn't know. We didn't know what it was going to be. And we had Chris Hardwick on pretty early on in the show, and he gave some great advice, which was like, yeah, do a little research, but don't be afraid to not look at it. Because our first few were like a little bit more regimented in that way, because there was like real questions. He, you know, Dax had a list of questions and he wanted to get to them, and it felt a little more confined.
Planned.
Yeah, and I think us doing the fact check kind of helped with that, because that is a space where we could really be us. And not even could really be us, we had to be. Like, we just didn't even have an option. We're just the two of us in a room. It's going to happen. We're going to argue. We're going to laugh. We're going to make jokes. Right. We're going to get mad at each other. Like, you know, these are all just the realities of our friendship. And there's no, we're not good at hiding it or making it look pretty. I mean, you can tell, you can really tell on our fact checks the ones where we have just had a fight. We tried to be, we try to put it aside and be professional and have fun on the fact check. But you, I mean, we're just not good at it. Like, we are very much animals of our emotional state, so, which is normally good and fun, but you know, we have our moments. So anyway, once we started doing that, which was, I think, off the first episode, but once we started to realize, like, oh, this is fun. Like, this organic chatter is where the, as you say, magic is. We started incorporating that a little bit more into the actual interviews and just realizing, like, organic is the way to go.
How did you guys go from, okay, so episode one, right now you have like over 20 million listeners? That's a monthly number.
It's bonkers. It is. I know.
So my question is, what was the trajectory, if you know, like, generally, mm-hmm. right? Like, what was the trajectory? And could you guys feel a stride from, okay, this feels good to us programming-wise, mm-hmm. cadence, our relationship, and the show downloads and success?
That's so funny that you bring all this up, because as you're saying those numbers, there's a part of me that wants to, like, put my fingers in my ears and not hear it.
Yeah.
Because I really think the reason our show works is that it's very intimate.
Yeah.
And the reason it is again, like I said, like, we're best friends. So when we're together, we just feel like it's us and the person, definitely not thinking about numbers like 20 million. None of that is in our heads at all. It's three people, me, him, and our guest. And to give everyone their due credit, we launched our show with Kristen, as I just said. And so, you know, that people want to hear Dax and Kristen. That is a truth. So it was not lost on us that would probably have like a fair amount of people come to see us. But the fact that they stuck around was a shock to us. We were so thrilled and excited by it and grateful, so grateful for it. But really, we just want to, I mean, it sounds so cliche. Like, I wish there was a not cliche way to say you just got to do what you like doing. But it's the truth. Like, the reason we wanted to do this is because it is just fun to talk to people and learn from people. We both always say that we, in our retirement, we want to go back to college. And this, in a way, is that, is just like learning from each person without the, you know, final exam, which is, you know, it's just the best part of all those things, especially our Thursdays. Those are always my favorite. And we have like professors on and the most, you know, scientists, and the most insane people. Bill Gates, like, why are you talking to us, Bill Gates?
Laura and I are in the business, right, of creative, the commercial side of creative. And all the time people ask us, but prove that it works. I would love to see, we talk about metrics all the time.
Yeah.
Like, how are you measuring it? Why does it matter? I would love to see a metric that said, Bill Gates asked these two people, right, to have a conversation about the future of humanity.
Yeah.
Monica, was there a point in the journey since this started that you knew this was going to go from having these debates that sounds like you were normally having off the mic anyway, mm-hmm. to like full-fledged business platform? Was there that moment for you?
I can't say there was an exact moment so much as, in fact, I am sort of slow. Like, you know, at the beginning, like, I'm very scared to be like, let's do this, and this. You know, I'm like, no. Let's slow down. Let's do this for a bit. Let's make this amazing. Let's bring people in with this. And then let's talk about the next thing. And then let's do that for a bit. And it's scary, you know, because everyone feels like their time is limited. But I feel it's really important to like take the time to build and earn people's trust before you move on to the next thing. So there was a lot of talk at the beginning about like, and let's do this also, and this and this. And I was like a big voice of, I think we need to go slower than that. And then you just feel it. Like, I think there's a moment where you're like, this is steady. This feels steady. Let's add something to the list. Or if someone comes to us and the opportunity feels really special or fun, really it's that. It's like, oh, is this something we are going to like doing right now? Let's pursue it. And like with our live shows, that happened fairly early on, and it, because mainly we were like, oh yeah, traveling to places and getting to do this like on a stage, how fun.
Right.
I always felt like this, how cool would it be if we could be a Gimlet where there's lots of shows and we're not on all the shows, we're on some of the shows, and we get to produce them and we get to have a platform for really cool voices. Like, I've always thought about that. And we've slowly grown more and more and more towards it, and hopefully we'll continue to. So that was kind of just like an overall thing I had it in floating around, but it definitely wasn't like a main focus until pieces started to fall into place a little bit.
I want to talk about, how do you choose your guests? Sometimes Laura and I have a method to our madness, and sometimes we're like, just like you, we're like, that person's freaking cool and they need to come on the show. They need to be known. Or yeah. We need to talk to them about something different that they don't actually talk about publicly, like, you know, those types of things. Do you have like a method or a creative brief, so to speak, on who you bring on the show?
No, actually, we are really open. In fact, we would just want to talk to as many just diverse people.
Yeah.
People from different backgrounds, different experiences, and that's why even on Mondays, you know, we have a ton of obviously actors and musicians, yeah. and celebrities. And But we don't ask them about their movies, or we don't ask them about their celebrity. You know, we ask them about their childhood, their relationship with their parents, you know, things that make them different and interesting, because everyone is. So we do not have a method. We reach out to people that we like or we find interesting, or, you know, we watch something on TV and we're like, that person's awesome, let's reach out to them. We have people reach out to us at this point for projects. You know, that's been a nice alignment for promotion for people. But yeah, we have no, like, we have no rules about who we will or won't have on. And again, like I said, in fact, we like to have everyone on, even people who, you know, we've had some guests where some of our audience is like, why'd you have that person on? They're in trouble, or, you know, those types of things. And we're like, yeah, but they're still a person and we want to know their story, and maybe their story will inform whatever decision they made. You know, we're just interested in those nitty gritties. But yeah, no, there really isn't a method. There is a method to the shows we put under our umbrella. It's important to us to have shows that kind of fit in with our ethos, which is like vulnerability, working on oneself. Like Nurture vs. Nurture is the family therapy show where Dr. Wendy Mogul talks to parents, and she is a family therapist. So she gives them a therapy session and you get to listen in on it. And it is incredible. I don't have kids, and it's like my favorite thing. I look forward to editing. Because, you know, and I've been saying this a lot lately, I just think it's increasingly true. The more specific you get, the more universal it is. And I think that's in marketing big time as well. Cause I think there's a thought of like, you gotta reach the masses. You gotta reach everybody. And it's like, no, actually you're reaching everybody by honing in on this very specific detail. Because weirdly, the details are what our brain can connect to. And I also learned that in improv. It was like one of the first rules I learned was like, don't call it a basketball, call it a Spalding basketball. So that the audience can literally pick, they know exactly what you're talking about.
They can like smell the Spalding basketball.
Yes. And everyone is immediately on the same page. It's not like I'm thinking of the basketball from my house and you're thinking of the basketball from your house. It's like, no. Now we all know. And so again, it's universal.
You know, it's interesting when you talk about the specificity at the top of the show, Alexa said, you know, if you program for everyone, you program for no one. Can you click in on that a bit further? So are there shows or examples you can give us where the universal, you know, element of it was, that was a proven thesis?
Well, yeah. I mean, I think the biggest one is Monica and Jess Love Boys. So when I started that podcast, I was really hesitant. You know, of course I was hesitant because it's me and my like love life, which is so, so scary. What am I doing? But I was also like, who is going to relate to this? Like, this is so bizarre. This is because that was, you know, me and my friend Jess and I, you know, serially underdate, and he serially overdates, and he's gay and I'm straight, and we're just opposites, but, you know, and we approach dating in a completely different way. And it was like, we're single and we don't want, you know, we eventually want to find a partner. And so it was like, let's talk about that and let's have experts on to help us through basically our issues. And we did that, and we had challenges at the end of each episode that we had to then complete by the following episode. It was so fun, but it felt really specific. I mean, we were talking to Esther Perel, and she's telling, you know, we're talking about the moment when I was 12 at the swimming pool and the boy said this to me. You know, it's all like, it's me and it's Jess and it's not universal at all. And I was like, oh my God, nobody is going to relate to this. Like, is anyone going to listen? And then of course, what you learn is like, I mean, really what you learn is like, you're not unique. Everyone experiences the same stuff. And everyone was like, oh my God, that's me, or I connect with this. And even like so many married people, which that was like the most flattering, what was learned is like, oh God, like people can really relate to this thing that feels so deeply personal. And that was really eye-opening for me and just made me feel like, oh yeah. And that's why Wendy's show, you know, again, same thing. It's two parents talking about their very specific children and growing up in Sweden, one of the episodes. And then, but you hear it and you're like, oh my gosh, like I can learn from that because I know that it's just beautiful. It's beautiful. Like it's beautiful to know we really are all way more connected than we think.
Mm, I love that.
What is the experience of bringing brands into the fold? And are there things we might be surprised as marketers to know that on your end as creators, you're open to or not?
Yeah. So our revenue is solely on ads. So we approve all the ones that we read, obviously. And we don't approve a lot of them that come to us. We really have to feel like, oh, this is something I believe in, or this is something I can get behind. And everyone's really awesome. You know, they send us the product. We get to like really get tactile with it and know it. We do some integrated sponsorships in the fact checks. Those are a little bit more intense, I guess, not really, but we just get a little deeper. And especially for those, we have to make sure it's like, it's a company we like and we believe in their product, and we just talk really honestly about it. And I also think that's part of it. The advertisers we work with know that our ads are going to be organic and very specific to us. If we can read a copy point for you if you'd like, but it's not going to connect. Like what connects are like the fun stories. There was this whole saga with Dax and this raccoon, like real thing that was happening nightly. And, you know, we were able to tie that into Ring because Ring was a part of this story. And so the more opportunities we have to do that, the better the advertising is for everyone, for us, for them. And like, yeah, so we did an integrated ad with Google Home. For a while, we did it over a bunch of fact checks, and it was really fun because we would ask Google facts, and it just led to so much fun. And once that ended, we were both like, "I missed that."
Well, I was listening to the episode you did with Brad, and you were doing a host read for DoorDash, I believe, but you were talking about your Christmas Eve ritual of McDonald's. And I'm like, well, I understand this was an ad for DoorDash. I'm going like, where's McDonald's with the Christmas Eve special?
Exactly. Well, that's really funny because what must have happened is, and I don't remember, but my guess is we did a DoorDash ad, totally regular, in which we talked about getting McDonald's. And then after that, we did do a McDonald's integration and we expounded on our Christmas Eve ritual, but none of it was made up. Like, I think the DoorDash ad, it must have been where we came up with the idea to do it. And then the McDonald's ad was the like full through, we did it.
I love Laura's point though, the reasons you're saying, like the intimacy, the personality, the perspective, yeah, all the stuff. But also to start to like even launch new kind of products and collabs and fun stuff like that.
Totally. And it depends on the show. Like if it's a cooking show or something, or the hosts love cooking. I mean, even us. So I got really into cooking this year, and we talk about it a lot on the fact checks. And there was this whole debacle where my apartment ended up smelling like fish for like a week. And we talked about that. And it was a whole thing. Like, did Monica's apartment smell like fish or not? Like, and that is an opportunity. Anytime you have something in your show that people are commenting on, I think brands need to pay attention to that and be like, whatever. If there's like an deodorant spray that is following that thread, that's an opportunity for them to be like, we want to get involved. We want to send some product. We want Monica to talk about, did it get her, the fish smell out? You know, little things like that, just paying attention to the hooks of these different shows where people are laughing and are interested. Like, I think riding those waves is the best.
So question, is there a place, and Ryan, our producer, and I were talking about this, and I love this question, where armchair umbrella turns into a, dare I say, a product that is, but a product that's tangible or something outside of audio, something outside of, and not merch, right? Like right now, right, you guys are doing, and I love your merch, P.S. And I definitely think the Monica shirt's probably the best shirt in my opinion. I also like the hot dogs from the live show, but, you know, does it become something where people can touch it, feel it, experience it, you know, in a different way?
Yeah. I mean, currently the live show, as you just brought up, is the version of that, is the different thing that you can get close to. And it feels different. Like those shows are different. There's a Q&A, you know, and it's a different energy. So that's us like kind of connecting a little bit more directly with our audience. And again, we move on to the next step when we feel we're ready to, or we feel like our audience wants it, or there's a space for us. And so yes, I guess is the overall answer is yes, I can see expansion in different realms, perhaps down the road. But you know, we've had discussions about some other, putting our hands in some other pots that are fun and organic to us, but it's nothing set in stone right now, but we're keeping everything on the horizon.
Okay. Three ideas. Ready? Here's pitch theater.
Hit it.
Absolutely. Like I'm thinking like Bob's, Ray Moore Flanagan, like there has to be an actual armchair that is the armchair expert, right? Like there has to be a furniture one. So that's one. Second idea. I mean, there has to be a coffee table book with all of the amazing interview excerpts. Like I just like, if I'm sitting on my armchair, that has to be the coffee table book.
Totally.
And you know, the third place I go, and Alexa and I have been talking a lot about, you know, sort of the future of education, thinking about curriculum.
I feel like anywhere you turn, like, especially in the tech business space, even in the media space, people are having like short form classes, right?
Yeah. Like I totally imagine armchair expert curriculum. Like, how do I come in and get like, you know, six classes and meeting these people? But I just think that the tone and like how you're approaching it, it's a really interesting way to think about learning while having like edutainment, I guess, is the way I'm thinking about it in a way that's beyond audio.
But what you said about improv hits so many things on the business side, many things on the creative side. And the point that you hit about specificity for relationships, like point to the thing that you want them to imagine, right? Yeah. Be very specific and then let their imagination go.
Yeah.
That has been actually probably a subconscious thought in everything, at least I've done in my career that was creative, right? For a commercial, on the commercial side, it was like, I know I want this thing, and this thing is the thing that seems to be the tuning fork, but everything else, you know, starts to become really exciting.
One thing I do want to add real quick. I also have been in 30 plus commercials as an actor.
Yeah.
That really is like for the acting space, that's pretty much been my bread and butter. So I'm really, really familiar with that world. Not to mention, I also write commercials for Kristen and I'm on set for those. So worked with many different ad agencies on all of those. And I, we just did, so Kristen has a CBD skincare line called Happy Dance. And we worked with Wieden Kennedy on those. And it was so fun and so creative and so great. And they really get specificity. they really understand it in a way that others don't. But you see a lot of these agencies make a lot of mistakes in that arena when you're on set, like trying to go as generic as possible when it's like, no, that's not funny. This is funny. And it's hard. It's hard. There's a lot of money on the table for a lot of people. And I think going generic feels safe. And it is. But it's not the thing that's going to make you rise above everyone else.
So Monica, specifically in the brand universe, let's put it out into the brand universe, who is top three brands you would love to work with?
I really want to work with a clean makeup brand that has many different shades. I think that's really missing in the makeup space. There are brands that do, and but some brands have like four foundation colors, and that's not realistic. That's just not life. And it makes people feel excluded. And I connect to that. I really connect to feeling like, oh, I need my skin to be whiter because there's not, I mean, because of a million reasons, but also I walk into Nordstrom and I don't see my color represented. That must mean my color isn't good enough to be represented. You know, these are the things that sort of go through your head. So I personally am just like dying to be a part of a brand that works to negate some of that. So yeah, let's say a clean, diverse makeup brand.
Got it.
I really want to work with a cookie brand because I'm obsessed with cookies.
I am a Girl Scout mom now, but I think you would be like, Girl Scouts should come and something with Monica for like all the girls. Like,
I would
holy
love
shit.
I would love it.
Hey, Girl Scouts of America.
I really would love that. Like, that's like so cool. Girls. Yeah. You know, learning about themselves,
they're learning about
skills, independence. Yes. Exactly. Yeah, I love it. I love that. Not to stay in the beauty space, but my hair is kind of the only thing, the only part of me that I have ever had any confidence in. And of course, I started out not having any confidence in it, but at some point I was like, oh, like this was something I can work with. My first commercial ever was an Herbal Essence commercial, and I was a mermaid in it with these two other girls, and it was so fun. It was like one of the craziest shoots to this day that I've ever been a part of. And one of the girls, they're both amazing actresses, and one was on Westworld, and the other has her own awesome, amazing career. And I was like, oh my God, we need to remake that commercial now. Revisit these mermaids. I think that'd be so fun. Anyway, so I'm trying to make that happen. I'll put that out there.
Before we go, we play a game with all of our guests. Buy, buy, buy. What would you get rid of? What would you buy or acquire? And what would you do yourself?
God, can I not to get like so deep and so political, but this is where I am right now. I want to say buy two guns. I don't, no more, no more.
Yeah, no more.
Yeah. They're not for me, guys. No.
What would you buy, acquire, anything?
Well, I would like to buy enough wrapping paper to fill up an entire nice size room. I want a wrapping paper room. So I'd like to buy all the stuff for that. I'd like to buy the wrapping paper. I'd like to buy all the ribbons and,
like,
you know.
Like the craft room. You want
Hallmark,
the craft room?
Here's looking at you, Hallmark. Here is looking at you.
Craft room, but specifically wrapping.
And what would you do yourself? What would be by Monica?
That you haven't done or are not doing?
I mean, I kind of already wasted it on the other thing I just said about representing a makeup line. I would love to do that myself. I would love to be a part of a makeup line that has a lot of diversity of color represented in it. Sorry, that's a repeat, but it is the truth.
If people want to get in touch with you to build any of these ideas, talk podcasts, integrate on any of your amazing shows, how can they get in touch with you?
I would say Instagram is probably the best way. And then I can redirect to whoever it needs to go to. Most likely will just be me at ML Padman.
Well, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
You know what I love about what Monica said around the specificity piece was not just what she said. It is 150% right on that actually specific is universal. When you're talking to a certain group of people, when you're in a certain community. But the thing that I loved that she was saying that I think we can kind of abstract a bit is this idea of improv. So improv is this give and take. It's, you know, putting yourself in an environment with other actors or other people or the audience, and you're playing off that environment, that context. Modern media is exactly that. And I even think about how Yieldmo has been on the show and has been talking about context and talking about being relevant. That's exactly what they're talking about. They have the instrumentation, they have the technology to do that. And sometimes I think that conversation in ad tech gets obscured by the tech rather than this deep understanding of you have to play on the field to even be in the game. Modern media at this point is all about that. And it really goes back, Laura, to like even people talking about performance marketing. Performance marketing has been, again, largely this race to the bottom. But performance marketing done well and done in a way that understands today's context is exactly about putting out MVPs of messages, putting out things for people to grab, react to, and then give you feedback on. And I think that that's exactly how marketers could start thinking about, instead of having the typical process of brief, RFP, creative concepts, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, and this one-shot waterfall process, is really to think about how you start to improv, experiment in the context, in the audiences that you want to be a part of, that you want to reach, that you want to buy your product. And that turns things from broadcast to dialogue, turns things from ownership on the corporate brand side to ownership in the audience's hands.
I think this line, and I've said it many times on the show, still holds. It is one thing to buy impressions. It is another thing to make one.
This has got me thinking about Eminem, 8 Mile. If you're a buyer, you're a marketer, lose yourself in the moment. Laura, hit it with the list of all of our friends and family at iHeart who have been so good to us and helped us get back on air.
Big thank you to Bob, Connell, Carter, Andy, Eric, Gail, Val, Michael, Jen. We appreciate you. Thank you so much for this opportunity. We'll see you in 2 weeks.